I'm so glad you're here.
Hey there. Thanks for checking in to check out part 2 of episode 5 and 6 in season 2. We're tying up the first part, which is mourning, with a discussion on missing, whether it's the people or the experiences, but also the lessons we've learned over the years. Thank you for continuing to listen. I hope you're well. And if you need help, please reach out. Keep reaching out. Someone will reach back.
Do you feel like, because you say like she was a mother, but only in that she was there, do you think that they're aware that ways that, like in terms of, you can say like there were specific things missing from my life?
Oh.
Because of that absence?
Sure.
Yeah.
She was locked in her bedroom for my entire teenage years. So, like, imagine growing up, turning 13, getting your period.
And just no one's there, right? And there's your dad, who's not necessarily going to say anything.
Well, yeah, no, my dad's not going to know anything.
And, yeah.
So, it's...
I'm recording.
It's okay, James.
I'll cut that out.
Just give us a couple more minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll take this moment to cough. I'm going to use this for an outtake.
Totally. Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's the best part of podcasts. Anyways, what was I saying?
You were talking... I asked you about... how, or maybe in places you noticed her absence, right? Missing.
Yeah, for sure. So growing up as a teenage girl and going through all of those crazy fucking transitions and my hormones going crazy, mm-hmm. and everything I learned from my younger friends who lived down the street and the movie Dirty Dancing. Like, that's how I got through puberty. Not the healthiest way. I'm still bitter about that. Like, there are still things that I'm like, God, like, I really wish I would have known that.
When
I was growing up. And I know that happens to everybody for lots of different reasons. Mine, in my case, is the fact that my mom wasn't there for me. And yeah, and like, that's, if I were to go to therapy, that's the issue that I would be tackling is... Yeah. Getting over the abandonment issue of her not necessarily choosing to not be there for us, but letting herself get to that point. And obviously there was a lot of mental illness involved as well that wasn't diagnosed. And it's unfortunate, but yeah.
I'm suddenly worried that I'm not recording.
but you are.
I am. Okay. Yeah, that would... do you feel like in the time that maybe those things that, like, there are women in your life back when you were in your 20s and even now who maybe fill some of that those gaps for you?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. For one, like, growing up... Well, not growing up, but, like...
We've known each other for a couple of decades.
Growing through our 20s together in Toronto. And, all the girls from school, for sure.
We were an interesting mix of women.
Yeah, and from different places and different backgrounds. And that was very cool. And I did have a couple of really good friends in high school that were there for me. So that was good. My aunts, like my mom's sisters, one of the two was very, very supportive and very understanding of my perspective.
Yeah.
And really helpful with, seeing things from their perspective as my mom's sisters and from my mom's perspective a little bit as well. We talked a little bit about how I learned about how my grandma was when my mom and her sisters were growing up and how difficult that was for them. And like, my grandma would just sit in a chair for 8 hours a day staring out the window because that's what she chose to do, because that's how she felt her time was best spent, I guess. I don't know. I feel like she felt really, really taken advantage of and kind of not really, she probably had a lot more potential that she didn't get an opportunity to show because she was the housewife. And
it's just a different generation from us, for sure. Yeah.
So maybe like my mom and her sisters feeling that almost sort of abandonment by not getting that interaction and intimacy and stuff from their mom. So yeah, it's just, it's all passed down. It's all learned behavior. So.
You're the second woman in recent weeks for me to mention that you had spoken to family members to better understand one of your parents, only to discover more about your grandparents. Mm. Because I think one of the ways we experience our grandparents is not how our parents experienced parents. And very much, you know, the way I experienced my parents is not how my child will experience them. So I think it's been, because I've been going through that journey a little bit too, finding out very delicately over the years more about these people, right? And the things that maybe our parents hide from us about the reality of our loving grandparents.
Exactly. And that's actually, not to go on a tangent, but like my whole ancestry obsession, that plays into it a lot too. Like when you go back a few generations and you can see, like you can look up newspaper clippings and like get little glimpses into how life was for them. And like just to see the struggles that they went through without any sort of social support. Like in Canada, we have a fairly good social system. It's better than most places. It's not the best, obviously. But
I'm nodding my head a lot.
Yeah, but like think about 50 years ago when it wasn't even, and like we're so much more aware now of how complex everything, and we're more tolerant of everything now. So imagine dealing with all of like mental illness 50 years ago when it wasn't even, we've all heard the story about the hysterical woman who was put into an asylum because she had a bad period every month, like it, and like no one knew how to deal with her, so they just locked her away. So yeah, it's just when you kind of take a step back and you look at things from that perspective, it makes it a little bit easier to accept why they did the things that they did, but I still don't see it as an excuse. Like I still get really bitter and resentful when I think about my mom sitting in her room for years and not caring, but not caring enough to get her shit together.
I'm sorry. I appreciate you sharing with that. I think I actually learned some things about your experience with your mom that I didn't know before.
Unless pointed questions are asked, I don't usually talk about it.
I'm like that about a lot of things in my life. I don't talk about them openly, but if people ask, I'll talk about them. Yeah. But it's still often sometimes vague as well. So.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of the women I've spoken to, the last few days you and I have been talking to about that, going back to that intergenerational trauma, and I think in some of the podcasts we've talked about in the past, like the lack of intergenerational support, right? And you can tie those things, like I think, together a little bit. It makes that support hard when the whole family's carrying all of those things from generation to generation. And I think that you and I have come to kind of terms with the fact our families have been here for a long time, and there's a certain amount of trauma comes with being colonizers in some way, right? And like understanding my family history, and it comes with this whole other interesting things to have to consider about my life.
I actually haven't gotten to that point yet, thinking about like my descendants. Yes. No, I can't remember what the word is. Anyways, my forefathers. Mm-hmm. I've not gotten to that point where I've considered any sort of like their involvement in any sort of colonization, because I don't think we were poor farmers and we came, anyways, this is a whole other podcast.
Well, it's fascinating though, like mine were empire loyalists, and they went to the south first,
And what I've been told is they fought in the war.
Oh.
And they then, like, escaped back up to Canada where they were safe and then settled here. And that's just one side of the family. So, you know, there was a time when I was proud of, like, my monarch connections in terms of having, like, a great uncle or grandfather who was a Queen's horseman. Mm. And then these Empire loyalists. And then one day I was like, wait a second, these are not things to be proud of anymore, you know?
No, well,
they did what they were told, but, like,
yeah, exactly.
Now, anyway, yeah, we're getting off on the...
yeah, definitely a more whole other podcast.
More outtakes.
So. But, yeah, no, that's... just having that perspective. But the whole... going back to the whole thing where we said we don't really talk about things unless we're asked about mm-hmm. them, that was my coping mechanism. I just was like... like, I'm not going to really talk about it unless anybody asks me about it. That way I don't have to think about it. And that's why I never went to see a therapist. Because that's all they would do, is talk to me and ask me about it. So why would I want that? So,
I've spent a lot of time in therapy.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it anymore.
It's, yeah, therapy I think is probably great. But, yeah, I don't think I'm ready for it. I don't know if I ever will be. That's just me.
Well, thanks for sharing today.
Yeah, no problem.
And I'm ending with a boat in the background.
Not a bad ending.
Not a bad ending. Not a bad ending at all.
I don't know if you and your brother have talked about this, but can you, or have you seen ways in which kind of the loss of your father in your lives has affected your brother and maybe even his ability to have healthy relationships or meaningful ones?
For sure. I feel like his, he actually is the type of man now to go all out for his women. And I think it's the way he's coping with it is, okay, well, I'm going to do everything I possibly can for the person that I love, because he knows what it feels like to not, or to, you know, be neglected.
Yeah.
Right? That neglectful experience was enough for him to overcompensate in a way. In an unhealthy way, though.
Yeah.
Right? In a way where, you know, a relationship should not only be about one person, right?
It's a balance.
That there's got to be a balance there, and you have to balance the other important people in your lives, right? But I think he's so scared of losing his significant other now that he overcompensates, and, you know, it's not healthy either.
One, so. Maybe he now also stays in relationships that he shouldn't.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
That's tough.
Say, yeah.
Do you think? So I also know, and we didn't talk about this previously, I'm trying not to blindside you here, but you're, I think, a fairly faithful and spiritual person.
Yeah.
And I've watched you step more and more into that over the last few years.
Yeah.
And do you feel that your relationship with your faith has helped you kind of move through this grief and open your heart to, like, other people to step into that role?
Yeah, I think it saved me. I really do. And, you know, this is something that I attribute my state of mind right now to my faith solely because I recognize that in my life, God has been more present than my father has been in my times of need. And that's a really hard concept to kind of, like, think about and grasp, especially if, you know, someone doesn't have faith, right? And I understand that. But for me, I have always found answers in asking things of God. I've found more answers from God than I have from my relationship with my father, especially because he's the type, my dad is the type of person to always be lying. So when you have someone like that, you don't know what answer is correct. You don't know what to expect. But for some reason, every time I've asked for help from God, I've gotten it, and I've gotten it in clarity.
That's amazing.
And yeah, so for me, like, that's something that, you know, took me time to realize and to, you know, understand, but it's definitely the reason why I have faith today is because, you know, when I needed it, I would throw something in the wind and I would get it, right? Like, it would be I'd be answered, right? Maybe not, like, auditory wise, but like,
but you're showing, you know, what you needed, or you're providing,
right, yeah,
the support.
I've opened my eyes and I've looked for the answers, right? Because I feel like, and people I've spoken with this about, you know, they tend to think, well, I don't hear anything and I never get my answers, right? And I think, though, that in those scenarios, it could be because they're not looking in the right places, right? And it could very much be that, right? Not to say that it always is, right? And sometimes it takes years to understand why things have happened the way they have, right?
Well, and sometimes we're blinded to, yeah, the truth because we're not ready for it, right? Like, and our heart and our minds can only take so much.
I was very angry at one point. And my mom and I have had this conversation before, and she's mentioned how she's been very angry. But that's something that, in one way, like, our hearts heal over time. They kind of soften a little bit to hard situations. And that's where, you know, you're able to kind of tie pieces together, is when, yeah, your heart softens a bit, right? And for some people, it could take their entire life, right?
Yeah, I know. I think sometimes that people, like, the anger and the resentment stage of grief is, yeah, huge, and is, I think, a lot of people turn a blind eye to it because, again, we don't have the coping skills to, like, work through it. And I think this, right, is, like, one of those spaces where, like, faith
In something
larger,
yep,
in yourself can, like, give people,
yeah,
the
hope.
Foundation, yeah, and the,
yeah,
hope,
and the hope
to kind of move forward. That,
exactly,
yes, this is painful now, but if I trust the path,
right,
that's being laid out before me, then the people that I need will, mm-hmm, come into my life. But,
yep,
but it's
absolutely
hard to, like, let that other person go, right?
Yeah, it is. It is really difficult, you know, and sometimes letting them go means setting boundaries. You don't have to break off ties completely. You don't have to, you know what I mean? Like, just setting appropriate boundaries in accordance with the kind of relationship they want to have, not allowing them to take advantage of you, right? Or it could mean a complete sever, you know, if somebody's, you know, well, yeah.
Well, I've done the complete
really
sever, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, and mm-hmm, I actually have a lot of respect for it because I know you as well, that I know your father has been around for,
mm-hmm,
some pretty big events in your life,
mm-hmm,
which I also know at times was upsetting for you. Like,
mm-hmm,
you were trying to do the right thing because of expectations.
Right.
And I have a lot of respect for your ability to walk that line, to say, I have a boundary with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you're going to be here, you're going to be involved, but there's a line. And I know that,
yeah,
that wasn't an easy line for you to walk. Like,
yeah,
there was a lot of anxiety around that.
Oh, yeah, a lot. And, like, that's something that I haven't, like, I don't know that I can actually articulate well, because it's something that I kind of have learned to, like, just take it day by day and see what happens. But I had to learn not to have any expectations.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, like, I can't have any more expectations because, you know, the presence of somebody physically also is, like, he was present at some events, but at those events, but also absent, because he only partook in the ways that he wanted to, right?
Yeah.
And you know, there are, yeah, I had to remove expectations, absolutely. And I wanted him there for my own sanity and my own mental health, not really for him.
It wasn't to satisfy,
right? It wasn't
someone
to
else,
satisfy,
yeah,
someone else, and it wasn't to satisfy, you know, well, what are other people gonna think? It was for my, so that I didn't have any regret.
Yeah.
So in one way, that is a bit selfish, but
I
mean, it's how I chose to cope as well, because I don't want to grow up with the regret of, you know, should I have done this differently?
Yeah.
Right? And so juggling with that is not easy.
Well, I would say, you know, at least for one of those big life events, I was there. And to, I mean, I know how much fun you had that day. but also to know how much grace you moved through that day. And, you know, how many people, like, loved you and were there to, like, support what was happening.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, and I'm glad he was there. And then having heard all these stories from you and then to kind of see your family in real life was like, okay.
Interesting.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get her now. Yeah. And oh my God, look how amazing she is. And I remember your mom and I had a conversation too.
I'm surprised I didn't break down that day. I really am.
But you know what? No way. I mean, there was so much love for you.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're being really vague for a reason, but it was a really beautiful day. And I do commend you. And I think you did the right thing to bring in this person who's like physically missing from your life.
You know? Didn't have any contributions beyond my parents' separation, you know. And this is the thing too, right? Like, should I have had the expectation that they contribute? Probably, but I mean, in one way, I mean, you can't really hold someone accountable to being a good parent.
I mean,
right?
I think the thing is, I mean, it's tough for me because I'm a parent, and I think the goal of every parent is to do better than our parents
right?
Which is impossibly hard if you haven't unpacked your own trauma, shit. But I think that there's also when we remove these people from our lives, and when they're missing from our day to day, there's a lot of lessons that come out of that as well.
Right.
I mean, you talked earlier about, you know, you have boundaries, but you also mentioned something about issues of trust because you said he was a liar. So I'm a little bit curious about one, how you navigate whether people are truthful or not. And then I guess my follow-up question to that is, like, how do you know when you're in the right relationship? Which is a loaded question because you're in a long-term relationship.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, one thing is I look at probability. And I look at how extravagant the story is. Because, you know, of course there are scenarios where it might be true. But I look at the probability of it. And then I look at how many times, like if, for example, you know, they've let me down for X number of times. It's like, well, they keep doing this on these events or for these scenarios. It's like, what is the likelihood that something always comes up when it shouldn't? I'd say it's pretty slim.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, so I kind of look at that as well. I look at, well, how frequent does it happen, right? And, you know, there have been times where, of course, you catch them in the lie, right, from other people. And, you know, well, no, this person wasn't here. They were there. And they're, to an extent, I think, okay, well, maybe it's pathological. And then I try not to blame him either because, in one way, I do think that it's something that he has to cope with a lot more frequently than I do, right? So I can't really blame him for, you know, anyway, I don't know. I mean, you do have to hold him accountable, right? And by setting those boundaries, you do hold him accountable. But
do you think though that your trust issues extend to other relationships
Absolutely.
In your life, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
for sure, because I feel like I always look for someone to be lying, and that's not a good way to live. Because and it's not a good way to approach relationships.
Yeah.
Because it's like if you're constantly questioning, right? But now I'm married, and I've been with my husband, like dating him since 2016. So it's been a while now, and I don't approach our relationship that way anymore, right? Like now when I ask him things, I ask him things out of curiosity, and I don't question him because we built up enough of a rapport for me to know, and I know his character now, right? But in the beginning, it was very difficult for me because I feel like I was doing that
So you're really guarded and kind of like questioning.
Yeah.
And do you think that part of that behavior came out of what you witnessed between your parents?
Yeah.
Right? So
for sure.
You came to your relationship with this man who is wonderful and lovely.
Yeah.
But you came with like a foundation that I guess you had learned to be distrustful, right? You couldn't take the person that you wanted to be with at face value.
Exactly.
And like kudos to your partner because trying to have the patience.
I know, right? Like it's so true.
He's a very patient man.
He is. He really is, you know. Thank God. Because like, you know, that's so being with him for so long and not seeing these patterns, right? Whereas I recognized a pattern with my dad, right?
Yeah.
So that it takes time, right? And I think at like a certain point, you know, you kind of like that wall kind of chips away, right? For that person.
Yeah.
But it definitely is person to person. Do you know what I mean?
I absolutely like, know. Yeah.
Yeah. The longer I know people, then the better it gets, right? But it's like absolutely everyone I meet. I constantly like replay conversations and
I get that.
Yeah.
It's that safeguarding of yourself, right? Is this person safe? Can I trust my intuition?
And yeah.
I even in the last month or so I've been digging in to some stuff and realized that I'm in a place of questioning my intuition.
Right.
Because I met someone, I met a friend's boyfriend,
right.
And quite frankly, I didn't like him. And I asked my boyfriend after the evenings, like, what did you think about so-and-so? And they're like, oh, he seemed like a nice guy. And I actually questioned my, like, I don't like this guy. I don't think he's a good guy. And a few weeks later, and so I actually deferred to my partner's opinion, thinking, oh, he must see something that I don't if he thinks this person's a good guy.
Right.
And then a few weeks later, I found out this guy just completely blindsided my girlfriend. They broke the relationship off. Like, she's completely heartbroken and she feels lied to. And then I was angry, like, to make it about myself, I was angry that I didn't listen to my intuition.
I see.
And this is a leftover for me of relationships where I allowed myself to become disempowered, I think is the word, and I stopped listening to my intuition because I have been in spaces where I learned that I couldn't trust my intuition because like the people that are supposed to love you are supposed to be the kindest to you. But in my case, some of the people that were supposed to love me were the meanest ones to me. So you stop trusting that intuition. And when I found out that this person had just been such a shit to my friend, I was like, oh my God, even though I love my partner, I can't defer to his opinion. Well, I have to hold to that one. Because I knew I didn't like the guy, and I kept making an effort to like him. And I was like, I don't understand why I don't like him.
Yeah.
And then when I found out the truth of the situation, I was like, holy shit. I think I understood it even before I understood the whole picture.
It's so interesting because women actually have an innate gut feeling when it comes down to analyzing other people. And now it's harder to do that when you're directly in the relationship because of mental past traumas.
Well, like our own patternings
and our own patterns and like what we look for in other people. It is harder to bypass those initial or instinctual gut feelings about people when it's you directly, but other people, like, because you were assessing the situation from an exterior perspective without bias feelings, you were able to kind of put a pin on, and it's so interesting. It really is. That's why we need good friends, but
absolutely,
you know, because we need people to surround ourselves and like to surround us that might give good input. That's so good. And trust your gut.
Yeah.
It's going to take time to rewire that though.
Absolutely. Especially when especially with those relationships with like our parents and things, right?
Yeah.
That when we've been raised in these environments where perhaps there's been lying, we end up questioning everything.
Yeah.
Like the way you did with your partner, that it took you a long time to bring down the walls.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I have another question just in terms of the fact that your father, less the mourning, but the missing part, that in the time that he kind of exited from your life, did you kind of seek out those male relationships
in other men in your life, like either from uncles or family friends or your grandparents?
I didn't, and I feel like I kind of like just like pulled myself out of, I kind of became more like lonely, and I like my mental health went downwards, right? And but I focused on work. I had two jobs and I was studying full time, and it really took a toll though on my mental health because I went into work mode and I became this, like, you could call it a machine, but I also like made myself go crazy. So there's that.
Like, you know,
I really hope you have better balance now.
I do. I absolutely do. I absolutely do. And it really does help working in an environment that's healthy for, you know, like for people who want the best for you so that you can perform the best, right? And I'm so grateful to have a job that affords me that, right? And I'm no longer in school anymore. I'm done that, thank God. And I only have one job, which is great.
And a lot of pets. You have a lot of pets.
I do have a lot of pets. They make me happy whenever I come home. I love seeing them. So, but you know, my life is very different now. But absolutely, it took time, you know. And I think because I wasn't seeking, you know, other, like I could have gone to my uncles or I could have gone to my grandparents, my grandfathers, because I have them both here still. But I feel like I didn't do that, and I kind of retreated, which wasn't necessarily a good option. But,
well,
you know.
But, I mean, it seems like it worked for you, though, right?
Yeah,
in terms of,
I mean,
what you needed to work through.
Yeah, I got through it. But everybody has their own ways of coping. I can see why other women might have. And maybe if it happened at a different age, maybe it was the age that it had happened, that they had separated and he had left, that made me react the way that I did. Maybe if I was younger, I would have had a different reaction, right? But because I was in a scenario where I already had these jobs and, you know, I just went full work mode.
You just went into it.
Yeah. Kept myself busy.
I wonder if that's your mother's influence as
maybe,
well.
Maybe.
Because she's a very strong, resilient woman.
Yes, she is. Yeah, she is. And she's done well for herself since. So I'm very proud of her.
Yeah. And
I've had a good mother model. Yeah.
I know the two of you previously butted heads. But I have to wonder if that's when you were both kind of in your angry stage of understanding your lives and the new dynamic that was happening.
Absolutely, right? We were both trying to cope at that point. And then living together, and, you know, she was the principal authority of the household, right? So there's that, where normally it would be alleviated between the mother and the father. You'd kind of, like, have a bit of a...
A little bit of a buffer.
Two people to take it out on. This time it was just her.
Oh my God, I can't even imagine the number of nights she probably went to bed crying.
Oh yeah.
Just feeling like abandoned and alone and like a failure, right?
Yeah.
Like there's your own
grief
when you go through a divorce or a separation.
Yeah, and you know, there was I don't want to say this to paint him in a bad light, but he had removed me off Facebook and told me that it was because I was posting inappropriate things. When if you look back, like,
you're not an inappropriate person.
I'm so conservative. Like, I'm such a conservative person.
You're such a lady.
I know. Thank you. but the reality was because he wanted to hide the photos of
his relationship.
A relationship. And so that's the kind of lying that, you know, we've caught him in that have had an impact on me, because, you know, it made me think, oh my God, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, I'm such a terrible daughter. Like, what could I do differently? I literally went back and tried to find something. I remember trying to find something that he could have been talking about, and I did not understand it. Right? So
that's crazy. And if he had just been truthful, right, then you wouldn't have started down this path of self-doubt.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Oh my gosh.
So.
Well, I want to thank you for talking to me today about your mourning and the things that may or may not have been missing in your life as a result of your dad not really showing up. And thank you for sharing.
I remember, from the letter that you sent me, I got the impression that the aftermath, like you guys went to the funeral and I found it really shocking, not shocking, but kind of surprising that you said we were basically wiped out of this person's life.
Yeah.
Like there are, our history with them from the first half of their life, or at least first half of your life, was just erased.
Yeah.
Like that had never happened, that he had never been in love with this person and created two amazing human beings.
Yeah. So that was the kind of the kicker, was that, you know, being estranged, we were sort of in his world, we were removed from his life. And I'm sure in his mind, we were dead to him, and that's how he was proceeding. So his brother was the executor of the will, made all the funeral arrangements, decided who was going to be speaking, and posted a version of an obituary that had excluded some very key people. And that included myself, my sister, and my nephews, his grandchildren.
Yeah.
So that was hurtful to read, and just, you know, you get emotional about it, but then you kind of hit a point where you're like, this is not even true. Like, it's not even, it's one thing to be hurt by it, but it's not even accurate. Like, you're not even writing the truth. That's my father, and I'm survived. I've survived my father. So, you know, kind of having that written out of history and just, you know, you kind of, you get into this, it can spin you into the space of like, oh, you know, everybody's doing this to me, right? This experience has been taken away from me. You know, they have written me out of history. And I don't know, I hit a point where it was just very like, well, this is just simply not true.
Yeah.
And that was helpful. That was a very a significant piece when I connected to that. It made me sort of realize that, okay, well, if my sort of release revolves around this idea of having a ceremony, this idea of grieving collectively with people that I love, if I'm feeling like someone is taking this away from me, well, I'll create it myself.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, and that's probably something that you're going to be very good at, because you're well into ceremony. Like,
yeah.
You know,
in COVID, I had to process a lot of grief through ceremony at home by myself when people died, right? Because we couldn't go.
Yeah.
And I did lose someone, not to COVID, but their illness was exacerbated by delayed diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And to not be able to go and have that community grief and to be a part of that was really hard. And I did something at home by myself. And do you mind talking a little bit about what you did? Because I thought it was actually really beautiful.
It was so simple, and it was just, you know, we had, so I had wanted to be part, my dad's plan was to be, he's from Barbados, and his plan was to be sprinkled across some mountain in Barbados. And my uncle, the executor again, was going to be taking his ashes, and we were in communication, and at some point he had agreed to go with me, and then gradually again we're feeling the estrangement again. He stopped responding to my calls, and it's too bad, because I think his assumption, and maybe this is me building a story, but I think his assumption was that I was trying to be involved in this process because I wanted to have some access to a will or something, because my sister and I were clearly not part of this, you know, whatever was being left behind. It's too bad, because it's really not what I wanted. I wanted peace in this process. I wanted to be able to just go and sprinkle the ashes and see my dad off. That's it. So I just hung on this idea of ashes, and knowing that my dad wanted to be spread in Barbados, my family and I, well, separately, we had decided to do a trip to Barbados for Christmas. So that was all of us. Everybody that was on this side of being excluded, on this side of the grief and experiencing the being written out of history, we went to Barbados together, had Christmas with family there, and decided to take, we were there for a week, we decided to take one of the days and go to my dad's house, and found his house. The night before, I decided to burn a picture of myself and my dad and make some ashes. And we took them there, said a few words, sprinkled the ashes, had a ceremony, you know, and it was us, it was the people who loved each other the most, and we supported each other. And for me, it gave me that release. It gave me that ceremony, right?
It sounds really beautiful. Like, I know you're like, oh, it's simple, but like getting on a plane and going to Barbados with a group of people is maybe not that simple. In the fact that you all went there with the intention of celebration of your family and your joy, with the intention of also closing this piece and saying goodbye to this person and honoring them in a way that also said, despite everything, you still heard his wishes and in the end did your best to honor them in a way that represented what he wanted. I think that's, I can't imagine that was easy, right? Because I feel like when we're estranged, there's also, I haven't been through that, but there's all of that. If you haven't reconciled it, all of the pain and the upset of being estranged and now having to say goodbye. Like, there's just no, there's nothing now. It's just you and spirit. And if you don't believe in spirit, then it's just you and your own thoughts. And I think that's, do you feel like as a result of kind of what you experienced that you have better boundaries around people and like where you're willing to show up and not show up for people?
I definitely, and that's the thing, like, you know, you go through this, like, you kind of, these things kind of take you to, and you have to go through grief to kind of come out and go like, oh yeah, that's it, that, you know, that, like, you won't know it until you go through it, right? Like, and you don't, you know, where I am now with it, and I feel pretty grounded in being able in having sort of this kind of grounded self control that, like, you know, it gives you a sort of sense of power knowing that you can kind of take that back very subtly, like, so yeah, it has helped me with boundaries and just that built level of confidence in yourself, knowing that you can build your own shit. Like, you can build yourself. It doesn't rely on anybody else. And just that experience of having that, you know, that idea of that funeral's being taken away from you, no. Like, you can move through your grief and release yourself.
Yeah.
And it's very freeing. And yeah, you know, I'm grateful for the experience. At this point, I can say this now, you don't know while you're going through it, but like,
it makes sense at the time, though. And I think it's also really beautiful because I personally feel that as North Americans, we do not have good tools for representing or honoring death. Like, it's so stiff, and there's such a formula to it, and I never feel like it's a true picture of that person's life. Mm-hmm. So I think what you guys did was really beautiful. And, you know, now it's giving me ideas of, like, how can I help other people move through their grief when this is not enough?
Yeah.
Or kind of what the standard industry offers up is not enough for some people. So,
like, you know, like a grief doula.
You know what? There's death doulas, and I think that it is a thing, right? And a friend of mine who is a death doula, like, her place is just to be there and be supportive. And I mean, when your family members can't be there, it's someone to also sit and be with them, but not just for the person that's preparing to pass. But it's also for the family to offer them support. Yeah. I know someone has said to me, like, you know, grief is love that we don't know what to do with. And I get that, but when you have an estranged parent, it's kind of like, well, I love this person, but they've been out of my life so long, where does this need to go? Mm-hmm. You know? I really want to say I appreciate you sharing your story. I know that it
may have not been easy to do at times, and we had to reschedule, and maybe I badgered you a little bit. I can get very excited sometimes, and from the little bit you had shared with me in the past, I was like, this woman has like a good story to tell that I think other women and men need to hear, so that if they're in this place as well, that they can move through this with grace and mm-hmm. honor that person's wishes despite whatever the relationship looked like at the end. So thank you for doing this today.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I just made a couple of notes. So one thing I wanted to say, that I think I was talking to someone else about something this week, but when we have someone who's been a constant in our life suddenly gone, like this mostly comes around, I think, more in intimate relationships, but even with a close friend or our beloved or chosen family, it's almost like our brain goes through withdrawal.
Oh,
like just they're gone, right? And it's its own kind of withdrawal as you go through life, and it just, they're gone, and your brain doesn't know what to do with it. Like, I think sometimes women who have emergency or who have C-sections, like our bodies and our brains go through a similar trauma of like, there was this thing inside me, now it's gone. Where did it go? Like, you can't connect what has happened. Do you feel like you're balancing things a little bit better now that you're?
I don't know. Yesterday something happened and I thought I'd invite her to that. I would just, my instinct was to see if she'd, what did I do? We went somewhere and it happens quite a lot where my brain would think I'd see something and I'd want to invite my friend and her daughter because this would be something we do together. So I still feel like I want to drink from that cup, you know, if it's like I'm used to something being there, but it's probably a little less often now and that will take time. But I think we don't, I don't know. I don't know if it's because we don't prepare for it. We don't grieve as a community well, and maybe since the pandemic, it's even worse. One thing I do like to do, in touching on the connecting with people that, you know, may have known her, and, you know, if you travel and you're going to be in a town where somebody is, and actually one of the people in the group that we started up has sent me a message and said, I'm going to be in your town, actually only two suburbs away, at Christmas time. So we're going to get together and we'll get maybe some others together and we might sit around a fire pit, which is what I'd like to do, and do a bit of a yarning circle, as they call it here in our Indigenous communities, our First Nations Australians. Our Aboriginal Australians have so much wisdom, as First Nations cultures around the world do, and I'm really trying to learn from that and honour that and share that in my work and my community as well. And I think in grief, I think there's a lot we can do. And, yeah, so I want to set something up. If people come, and if you come, we'll sit out in the forest and tell stories and carry on.
I just had to take my glasses off. I just cried a little bit and my heart feels so full, like that. I'm so pleased, and I know that she would be sitting there too. Like, she would just be so happy that all of these people that are coming together, partially to retell all the zany stories about her.
There's so many that I don't know. I just can't wait to hear them all.
I had a few photos that weren't appropriate for the group page. I might send them to you. This last week in reading the posts, someone mentioned that our friend had gone to Naked Yoga and invited them, and they always regretted not going. And so that night, I feel like one of the things for me for the last year is that the loss of this person in my life has actually been a motivator to kind of pick myself up and challenge myself. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, like letting the way she lived her life inspire me, because she did do so much. And so I did Naked Yoga, and then I think I'm going to tell you how the week of celebrating her also involved. So some of the last conversations she and I ever had were about how she was so fascinated with the power of masturbation, and not
I didn't tell you I was going to talk about this, but
that's
the idea that instead of fantasizing and getting off to the idea of another partner or an experience, that you are pleasuring yourself to your intentions and your dreams and the things you're going to do with your life and how amazing you are as a person. And I have never forgotten about this. And I actually went outside and challenged myself to be outside, but under this amazing blue full moon we've had here in Canada. And just remembering, like, this is something insane that she would have done, you know. And so this week has been very interesting and very led by her whimsical nature and her ability to just be so curious and to try things. And
oh, I hear you.
Yes. I did something similar. I went for a swim in the lake. It's winter here, but I am in Brisbane. It's actually really pleasant. And I went for a swim in one of our dams, our reservoirs around just outside of Brisbane. I took my son and the sun, and it was the afternoon sun. It was golden. I dived into the water and I thought this is something she would have done, but she would have done it naked. I didn't. And I was always the conservative one out of the two of us. She was always shocking me, but making me laugh. And also, yeah, really challenging why I have set certain boundaries. And I've definitely pushed those. I went and got my first tattoo a couple of weeks ago in her memory. Yeah, I was thinking, well, 45, get a tattoo, I can't get in trouble anymore. But I really, really am honoring that, learning from that moment of when we lost her. And I realized that the things we put so much energy and thinking and worry about aren't actually real. They're sometimes important things like work, but they're actually a manifestation, I suppose, or a fabrication of existence that we have. And so I'm really trying to now just put boundaries on those things and spend time with families and loved ones and not worry about what people think. And that's where the tattoo kind of fit in. And we're always remembering to be in the moment and live every moment to the fullest, because you only get to do it once.
And
I don't know about naked yoga. I still don't regret. I regret not watching. I think I am fascinated about how and what that looks like, but I don't actually want myself.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I did it at home by myself, so maybe
That's okay. There. Yes, that's true. I do love a skinny dip, we call it here in Australia, a swim, you know, a naked swim.
Yep.
We still love a skinny dip in the night, so maybe that could be my next step. And I used to love doing that as a kid, you know, getting back to those things. And I think there was a real connection to that youthful freedom that she had. Yeah.
Yeah, she definitely engaged in activities that really, I think, kept a lot of positive, like dopamine and serotonin flooding her brain that she... Mm-hmm. I mean, I probably can't even get into some of the things that she and I got up to, but definitely there was naked beaches and lots of swimming.
Oh, yes. I heard some of those stories too. They sound good. Yeah.
Well, I want to just thank you again for taking the time to talk to me today. I know it took us a little bit to organize, and I feel like for me, this has been a nice way to cap off the last year. And I feel like I can move forward, opening my arms to a whole bunch of new friends that I'm going to meet down under soon enough, hopefully.
Yes, hopefully. Definitely. That's great. Yeah, thank you. And thank you very much for opening this space up for us to share as well. The really difficult sort of process of grief in our current society, where we're expected to keep performing, keep working, you know, and look good while we're doing it. Grief doesn't fit into any of that.
Yeah, and I think to that thing we were saying earlier about, you know, we don't, definitely our age demographic doesn't have good coping skills, partially because in some cases our parents were so young and we had our grandparents and they all lived so much longer that we haven't always had the experience with it. And I do think that we're getting better at it. And I think a huge part of it is just keeping the amazing stories of these people when they're gone alive, and then living our lives in their best memory, you know, living our best lives,
yes.
And using that grief to propel us to do great things.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Just reach our full potential. That's the goal, I think, for all of us.
Yeah.
If we can.
Cool. Love you all. Thank you.
Love you.
As bye. Grandma said, love you and leave you.
Wonderful.
That's hilarious.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
If you're interested in joining the monthly Ode Bitch Boast Gathering, you can find event listings and tickets, which are free, on Eventbrite, as well as on the Town Ritual Facebook page. Search Town Rituals online. If you'd like to participate in a future podcast, please send me an email at townrituals@gmail.com, noting podcast in the subject line. I'm so glad you're here.